And we're holding on Lamed Ches, Amud Aleph, the second line. We learned in the Mishnah, we said, if a Yid's ox gores and injures or kills an ox belonging to a goy, then the Yid is potter. On the other hand, if a goy's ox gores the one that belongs to a Yid, then he's chayiv nezek sholem, he's always chayiv to pay full nezek, even if the animal was attacked. So the Gemara asked, Amri, so they asked, Mimonafshem. Either way you look at it, it seems to be inconsistent. Now, we learned yesterday that the pasuk mentions, in connection with a shor tam, it mentions the word re'ehu, which means his fellow yid. And we discussed, is that meant to be exclusive, that it means that these dinim apply only to a fellow yid, and therefore we discussed whether they apply to hekdesh or not, or whether it's not, and so does the word re'ehu mean specifically a yid, or does it not? So now, Amri, so they said, Mamonavshach, either way you look at it, I re'ehu davka, if the word re'ehu in that pasuk means specifically that these dinim only apply to a yid, then deknani kinogach Yisrael nami lifter, then if a goy's ox gores a yid's, then the goy should be potter, because after all, he's not re'ehu. So therefore, the whole concept of paying shouldn't apply. And if the word re'ehu doesn't specifically mean a yid, it can be extended that the same din applies to a goy as well. Then a yid should be liable if his ox gores one of a goy. Why this inconsistency that we're saying that the goy is chayev always, nezek sholem, regardless? And we said, we talked about yesterday, the idea that it mentions re'ehu only in connection with a tam, implying therefore that by a mord, we're saying you don't need by a mord re'ehu wouldn't apply. Well, then in that case, so if you say it doesn't apply at all, then either way they should be then either way you should be potter, and if it does apply, then either way you should be chayim. Rabba Bohu says yes, but there's a different consideration. Omakro, you have a pasuk in Chavakuk. We have it in Aftar to the second day Shavuos. Omad by the whole chapter Chavakuk, Kapitel Gimel, is a tefillah that he's saying to Hashem, asking Hashem to continue showing open nisim to save the Jewish people, like he did in olden times. And he mentions over there the nisim of, among others, the nisim of Matan Torah, which is why we read that on Shavuos. Anyway, the pasuk says Omad by Yemoded Eretz, Hashem stood up and measured the earth, raw vayater goyim, he saw, and vayater the nation. Now, vayater, in the simple meaning, the Mephoshim on the pasuk explains it means like he jumped around among them, and to decide that whether it means that Hashem saw and he jumped around and he was matir that we Jewish people should conquer and take over the nations of Canaan, but it means something else. The Gemara says, Ra Sheva Mitzvah Shekibla Aleim B'nei Noach, Hashem saw Ra, what's the Ra? Hashem saw the Sheva Mitzvahs that the Goyim had accepted on themselves, Kivin Shalei Kimu, where they're not fulfilling them, Omad V'hitur Mamonim L'Yisrael, therefore Hashem Omad V'yat, so we're saying, V'yater, Meloshin Mutter, Omad V'hitur Mamonim L'Yisrael, so Hashem made their money to be Hefker, to be Mutter to Jews, that now, in other words, that we say, so now we say, even though without that it would have been that yes, we would treat them exactly on a par with a yid as far as the dinim of an ox goring, but now we say as a result of this, then Hashem says that no, their money becomes to that extent mutter to Jews. Now, for most purposes, not. Tosfos points out we have a Gemara later in our Masechta that mentions that you're not allowed to steal from a goy. And mind you, there was a different opinion about that over there. We'll get to that later on Daf Kuf Yud Gimel a few months from now, Bez Hashem. But for the most part, the money of a goy is certainly not free for the taking for a yid. But we're saying in this particular case, we're saying that Hashem took away this privilege from them because they're not keeping Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach. Which, by the way, leads some Rishonim to say, well, in that case, Goyim who do keep the Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach are not in that category. So nowadays, many Goyim do keep them, so that would mean that this din wouldn't necessarily apply to them. That's what the Meiri says. On the other hand, different Mephoshim point out, now we talked about yesterday that Amnon gives a point. He says in the Goyish legal systems, they're not machayev a person for the damage that his animal does. So whether they do nowadays in modern legal systems, I don't know, but in their times they didn't, and therefore that gives us a basis for this deed. We can tell them that look, you know, when one of your oxen damages one of ours, the fact is according to our laws, you hire, as opposed to when one of ours damages one of theirs, we're able to tell them, look, according to your own laws, I would be potter, so you don't have a basis for taking away money from me. In fact, Shutum Kubetis brings from Rabbeinu Yohanes, and it's more than that. It's not just that in their laws, maybe they're not careful. It's not just that in their laws they don't make a person liable for such a thing. It's more that they're not careful at all to guard their animals and prevent them from causing damage, especially to Yidden. So therefore the Chachamim would penalize them and say that they're going to be chayav to pay in that case.
There's a contradiction here.
Yeah.
There's a contradiction here. Living within the Goyish world and saying that Dina de Malchusa Dina, so we are subject to the laws of long.
Okay,
Let me finish. Can you let me finish? We live in the Goyish world and we're subject to their laws. And on the other hand, we say the Dina and Malchus Dina. How can we say also that when they cause damage, they're not responsible for it?
Avraham Moshe, you made your point. Now let me explain. First of all, many Rishonim learn that Dina de Malchus Dina only applies to things like taxes and whatnot. Many Rishonim hold that does not apply in general to civil law. But even those Rishonim, so first of all, according to them, there's no question. Even according to those Rishonim and Poskim who say that it does apply to civil law, well, very well. If the civil law says, that's the whole point that I was just saying, that Rambam makes the point that in civil law, at least back then, it was not mechayev a person for the damages of an animal. Therefore, when a yid's animal damages a goy, we tell them, look, dina de malchus dina, according to your laws, then I'm potter, therefore I'm potter. When, on the other hand, when a goy's animal damages a yid, and we're talking about where a yid, obviously we're talking about where a Jewish basin has power to do something about it, then we would say, not so. The fact is that our laws, the fact is we do have our own civil and criminal system, and that says that you're chayim. Even if we say Dina de Malchus Dina applies to such things, we're obviously talking about a time when Yad Yisrael Takifa, when Jews have a certain degree of power to be able to have the Goyim follow our laws, at least in these kinds of cases, and therefore we say that's what we do. Anyway, let's go.
There's a blatant contradiction, whatever.
It's not
a
blatant contradiction, I just explained. If you want to discuss it further later, we'll discuss it later,
Today it's a contradiction, but let's move on.
Okay, you think it's a contradiction. I already explained it's not, but whatever, let's go on. Okay. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Mehacha. Rabbi Yochanan says we have a different pasuk that expresses the same point, Hoyfia Mehar Paran. We have at the beginning of Parashas Besos HaBracha, where it says Hashem appeared from Har Paran. That means me Paran, from Paran, when Hashem circulated around among all the nations of that time. We know Hashem offered the Torah to each nation, and each one turned it down. And they didn't accept it. So Miparan, from there, from Paran, which is where the Yishmaelim live, Hafiyah, Mamonim Yisrael, Hashem made their money appear to the Jewish people, meaning, in other words, that Hashem said, because they don't want to accept the Torah, therefore, to this extent, their money is forfeit to Jews. Again, we don't mean in general. In general, Gezel Goy Mutter, and in general, you have various other things. Again, whether Dina de Malchus Dina applies to this is a question among Poskim, because Dina de Malchus Dina doesn't necessarily apply to civil law in general. It may only apply to things where the government has a certain interest in it, such as taxes, but that's a whole other discussion. But anyway.
Well, the government doesn't have an input in civil law. Are you kidding me?
They may not. Sometimes in some
They
places.
May? The government doesn't have an input to civil
Avraham
law?
Moshe Alexander,
how can you say something like that?
In some places, they tell different groups you can follow your own civil laws. In others, they...
We're not talking about
laws.
Sometimes
so yes,
in some places, Alexander. We're talking about Western civilization.
Where
the government has a major input.
I'm going to put you on mute because we really have to go ahead. Yes, as I said before, the Meiri points out that in places where they keep the Shev Mitzvahs Bnei Noach, then that may be different. We're talking over here, first of all, primarily about nations that don't keep the Shev Mitzvahs Bnei Noach. Second of all, as I also said, we're talking about primarily places where they don't hold a person responsible for the damages that his animal causes, meaning that the civil law in such places does not. In America, do they consider a person liable for the damages his animal does? I don't know, really. I'm not a lawyer. But we would have to ask the lawyer, I guess. Very likely, yes. And in that case, the halacha would indeed be different because of that. Because, but again, we're talking about over here in a place where they don't have such a law, and where Yad Yisrael Takifa, where Jews have the ability to tell Goyim, you have to follow our laws, at least to that extent. So therefore, we're saying that that becomes the halacha. Now, let's please continue without interrupting about this every second, okay? First, let's learn what the Gemara is saying over here. We can discuss the contemporary applicability of it later. Anyway, the point is, so again, we're saying, from the fact that they refused to accept the Torah, then and Paran is where Yishmael lives, then therefore their money became mutter to Jews to this extent. Tosfos points out, actually, that elsewhere the Gemara implies that Paran itself is Har Sinai, and therefore Hifia Me'ar Paran means that Hashem appeared at Har Sinai and gave the Torah to us. Tosfos points out it's a large desert, so different parts of it. One part of it Har Sinai is, and a different part is where the Yishmaelim live. Marsha adds also the point, you know, we know that each nation Hashem offered the Torah to, then each one gave a different excuse why they don't want it. B'nai Esav said because it says Lo Sirtzach, and we live off murder and so forth. And B'nai Yishmael, what do they say? We don't want to accept it because it says Lo Signai. So therefore, appropriately enough, when B'nai Yishmael and they didn't want to accept it because of Lo Signai, then Hashem said, okay, well then obviously you don't consider not stealing to be an important value. Well, therefore, then in that case, your money is forfeit because of that. Again, not in general, as Tosfos is saying, Gezel Goy Osir, as we're going to learn later on in the Sefta, what we mean in this particular case. Okay, so the Gemara says, Tanya Nami Hochi, we learn similarly in a Braisa, that mentions both of these Limudim. We had Rav Abohu's Limud from Rav Ayakar Goyim, and we had Rav Yechanan's from Hefiyah Mehar Paran. So a Braisa mentions both of them. Shor She Yisrael Shenogach Shor Shoknani Potter, that if a Jew's Shor gores one belonging to a goy, then the Yiddish potter. Shor shoknani shenogach shor she Yisrael bein tam bein mor mashalim nezek shalim, and the other way around, he's going to be paying nezek shalim. Shenema omad vayemoded eretz zroa vayater goyim va'omer hifia mehar paran. So the Braisa brings both psukim. Well, my va'omer, then the question is, according with the Amor Goyim, Rabba Bohu, and Rabbi Shut and Rabbi Yechanan, we understand why each one is bringing. So fine, each one holds that the other one's posuk is insufficient, but in a Braisa, We're in a Braisa, why is it bringing both of them? So and the answer is v'chitema, because otherwise, if you only had the one pasuk, you would say, "Hi, Omar by murdered Eretz Mibola l'chidra Masne v'chidra Yosef," because maybe the words "Omar by murdered Eretz" are actually not teaching us anything about Hashem being matir the money of the goyim, but rather for a different drasha that we're going to learn later down on the Amud, that we're going to learn what Rav Masna and Rav Yosef says, what we learn from that pasuk. So that drasha is not enough. Toshma, therefore, we need the second pasuk. That after they refused to accept the Torah is when Hashem said that in that case that their money is forfeit as far as this. So nevertheless, though, of course, now the Braisa still did bring the drasha from the first pasuk, because the fact is Vayater Goyim, Tosfos Yom Tov points out, Vayater, which is Maloshon Heter, is in a way a stronger drasha. Hifia Mehar Paran, where do you see? They are explicitly in the pasuk that Hashem appeared from Har Paran, but where do we see that Hashem appeared and made something mutter that wouldn't otherwise be? Pnei Yeshua, in fact, points out What is it? So you have two different places where we're saying where they lost this privilege of being able to collect for such a nezakin and being able to get away with paying only partial nezakin for such a thing. Here, one drasha is saying because they didn't accept Sheva Mitzvahs, the other one because they didn't accept the Torah. So then those two drashas would contradict each other. When did this come into play? Well, we have the Gemara in Avodah Zarah that when Hashem judges the nations for Osir Lavoi, he's going to tell them, why didn't you keep the Torah? And they're going to say, why weren't you willing to accept the Torah? And they're going to say, well, you forced the Jewish people to accept it. Kol Ta'aleim, how can you do this? You didn't force us. And Hashem is going to say, sure, but you didn't keep the Shem Mitzvah Bnei Noach either. So therefore, so we see that those two things go together because they didn't accept the Shem Mitzvah Bnei Noach. That's part of an argument showing that they don't have an excuse to say we didn't accept the Torah because it wasn't forced on us. So therefore, so Pnei Yeshua points out these two drashas really go together, which is ultimately why the Braisa brings them together. Okay. So therefore, so Toshma, Hifia Meher Ponon, Ponon Hifia Mamon in Israel. Okay, my Rav Masna, what is Rav Masna's drasha? So we said we have Rav Masna's and Rav Yosef's drashas from this word, from this pasuk, Omar Vayimodid Eretz. So what are these two drashas? So my Rav Masna, the Omar Rav Masna, Omar Vayimodid Eretz Rav Agoim, we're saying Hashem stood up and measured the land and he saw Vayater Goyim, where we said Vayater, we darshan before that it means that Hashem was matir the property of the nations to the Jewish people under certain conditions. So Ma Ra, so in Ramasna Drosha, what did Hashem see? Ra Sheva Mitzvah Shnei Stavu Alem Bnei Noach. Hashem saw and looked at the Sheva Mitzvah that the Goyim had been commanded in, Veloy Kiyumum, where in fact they didn't keep them. Therefore, Hashem sent them into Golus from their land. And that means not just the seven nations of Canaan. Rashi gives other examples. You have examples that are mentioned in the Torah where there were ancient nations that then were conquered and dispossessed by other ones. You have, for example, the Pasuk mentions that there were Plishtim living, there were Avim, which is one of the Plishti nations, living in what's now the Gaza Strip, and Kaftorim came and dispossessed them from there. So now the Eibushter should help, but now we have again the Avodas Aburudim takes place then, like happened there. Anyway, you have another example where it says in Seir, you used to be a Chorim, lived there, and Bnei Esav drove them out. So you have examples like that where Hashem decides that a certain nation, their time is up, and it's time for them to be conquered and taken over and driven out by other nations. Yeah, you have examples of that over and over in history. Worth mentioning in this connection, something Rav Shamshon Raphael Hirsch says about this. He points out, you know, you have in European history, there came a point at the end of the Roman Empire when there were nations pouring in from various parts of Asia and Eastern Europe or wherever and taking over lands that they're taking over new lands. So he says, the point is, at that time, in his times, Goyim was saying to Jews, you don't belong in Europe, go back to Palestine where you came from. Nowadays, of course, they do the opposite. Nowadays, they say, you don't belong there, go back to wherever. But anyway, so he says, Hashem made all this happen as this way a Yid can say to those Goyim, so you're telling me we don't belong over here? Really? Tell me where your ancestors came from. Meaning they don't come from this land either. You don't think that you're any more, that you belong in this place any more than we do. Anyway, the point is, Rav Masna is saying in a similar vein, Hashem saw, since the Goyim are not keeping their Sheva Mitzvahs, then therefore they deserve to be driven out and dispossessed from their land. So, my mashma dahai vayater lishna dahai gluyehu, in which case, according to this drasha, how does the word vayater come to mean sending them into Golus? Because, ksivacha vayater goyim, oktivatam lenater bohein ala oret, you have the same shoresh of vayater is the word lenater, which means to jump. The pasuk is talking about certain kinds of locusts that are kosher, where they have those extra long front legs that they use for jumping, lenater bohein ala oret, and maturgam, lekapotza bohein ala ara, that they use them to jump on the ground, to jump off the ground. So the point is, we see that the word vayater goyim therefore means that Hashem made them kind of jump away. Hashem made them have to be forced out of their land. So that's Rav Masna's Durasha, in which case we can say that Rav Masna's Durasha doesn't directly have to do with the fact that there's a case where a Yid is able to take money from a goy, namely this case of an animal goring, and therefore the Braisa had to bring the second Durasha from Hifia Mehavaram. My Rav Yosef, what is Rav Yosef's Durasha? The Amr Rav Yosef, Rav Yosef also uses this pasuk. Omar Vayimodid Eretz Ra before. Ma Ra, what did Hashem see? Ra Shev Mitzvah Shekibla Aleim Bnei Noach. Again, he saw that the Goyim had originally accepted on themselves the Shev Mitzvah Bnei Noach. Veloi Kiyumum, and they're not Mekayim them anymore. Omar Vihitiron Lahen. So now, Omad, when it says Ro Vayater Goyim, so Rabbi Yosef is understanding the word Vayater, Meloshen Heter, means that Hashem, Omad be Tiron Lahem, Hashem made these Shev Mitzvahs are Mutter to them. Are Mutter. So the Gemara asks, so if they're Mutter, meaning in other words, what? So before a Goy was not allowed to worship Avodah Zarah and now he is, before a Goy is not allowed to steal and now he is, it's Gurei Itker, then in that case he's gaining. Doesn't it come out then that a sinner profits? It comes out then that they profited by the fact, had they kept the Shev Mitzvahs and Enoch all along, then they would still be chayev in them. Now that not, Rabbi Yosef is saying they become potter from them. That's not how Hashem works things. So the answer is, Oma ma brei d'rabbana, loymar. No, what Rabbi Yosef means by that, shafilu makayim in oisan, even if the goyim are mekayim those mitzvahs from now on, ein mekablan alein schar, they will not receive a schar for it because now they're not the, because now they don't have those mitzvahs anymore. Now they're mitzvah v'oisim. So Rashi points out they're still going to be subject to punishment if they violate them. And again, to say they're subject to punishment, you know, in a time and place where it's not Yad Yisrael Takifa, there's nothing to talk about, of course, but we're talking about, again, in a time when Yad Yisrael Takifa, in a time when we Jews have the ability to enforce Torah law, then yeah, that includes enforcing the Shev Mitzvah Menayach, as the Rambam phrases it, you know, Mitzvah Siva Moshe Rabbeinu Piyat Bura, Lok of Us Kobaya Olam, literally to force the entire world to keep the Shev Mitzvah Menayach, with all the consequences that implies. But now we're saying, on the other hand, once they gave them up and stopped keeping them, then if they keep them now, they don't get a schar. The Gemara asks, is that so? Valoi, why shouldn't they get a schar? V'hatanya, Rav Meir Omer, we learn in a braisa that Rav Meir says, or Rav Yumia, it says on the side over here, it might be, minayin shafilu nochri v'oisek v'torah, how do we know that even a goy who occupies himself with Torah, meaning learning the Sheva Mitzvahs and other things that are relevant to them, shahu kakoyin gadol, he is on the level of the Kohen Gadol. Now, some of the Mephoshim say that that's a bit of a guzma. The Shittim HaKobetzis brings from there, oh, it's a guzma. It doesn't literally mean he's on the level of the Kohen Gadol, but it means he's on the highest level that he could achieve. And Marsha, elsewhere, the Gemara is also in Avodah Zarah, Marsha points out, after all, one of the mitzvahs that's applicable to Goyim, besides you have the Sheva mitzvahs themselves are all mitzvahs loisaseh. You have a number of mitzvahs aseh that could apply to Goyim as well. They could do them if they want to, one of them being bring a korbanos. Even nowadays, a Goy is allowed to bring a korban to Hashem anywhere in the world he wants. We Jews are only allowed in the Beis Mikdash, but a Goy would actually be allowed anywhere. So therefore, he says that's what it means. If a Goy learned the halachas of korbanos because he wants to bring a korban to Hashem, then he of the caliber of the Kohen Gadol, who also brings korbanos. There are places, there are sichas where it ever points out that what it means is, what the statement means is that when a goy learns Torah, to a certain extent, we say obviously a goy doesn't have a mitzvah of Talmud Torah the way that Jewish men do. But nevertheless, to a certain extent, he's learning only for a practical purpose in order to find out what he needs to do and what he shouldn't do. Nevertheless, we're saying that his learning Torah is considered on the level of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. And we're saying over here, he gets a certain schar for it. So what are you telling me, therefore, that, now that they don't keep Shev Mitzvahs from Enoch regularly, then they don't get the schar? We see that they do. And so the mayor says, how do we know that a goy is oisik patora shul kakoyin gadol? Tamud lemasha yasa oisim ha'odam v'chai bohem. Therefore, the pasuk says that that ha'odam should do these mitzvahs and live with them. Now, it says ha'odam, koyinim alavim v'yisraelim lo'inem. It doesn't list the divisions of the Jewish people. Ela odam, it mentions odam, ha'odam, that means every person of humanity. Ha'lamata shakim v'nokri v'oisik patora harayu kakoyin gadol. Now, Tosfos actually has an interesting discussion over here. We usually say Atem Kruyim Odom. So what are we saying over here? That Ha Odom means Goyim, means includes Goyim as well. So first, Tosfos describes there may be actually a Machlokas Tanoyim on that point, whether Goyim are included in the category of Odom. Then Tosfos says, there's a difference between the word Odom and Ha Odom. Sometimes we find the word Odom refers to people as well, but Tosfos explains in each of those cases you have a specific reason why that's so. But ordinarily the word Odom, yes, refers to Jewish people specifically, Ha Odom, which means humanity in general, so therefore that includes the Goyim. Why is it that Atem Kruim Odom? Why is it the term Odom is reserved specifically for the Jewish people? There's a number of points about it, one of them being that Odom means Edam El Elyon, that a person is expected to resemble Hashem as much as possible, and we Yidden are more able to do that because we have a Nefesh Elikis. And there's different other points as well. There's an interesting thing that was brought up during the Bayless trial, the famous blood libel trial 110 or so years ago, where one of the goyim, of course, brought up this point to claim that Jews hold that goyim are not fully human, and one of the rabbanim at that time explained what it means is Adam is the only word for a person that can't be pluralized. The word Adam is the same in singular and plural, and therefore it represents, he says, you see, we have one yid on trial over here, and Jews from all over the world are rallying to his defense, and you see that the one yid is on trial, and on the other hand, you prosecutors are using that to accuse all Jews throughout the world. So both you goyim and lahavdo, we Jews, feel ourselves as one person much more than the goyim do. You have one Frenchman or one American or whatever is on trial, the whole all the rest of the Americans and all the rest of the French or whatever don't rally to his defense, but we do. So therefore, in that sense, we deserve to be called Adam more than any other nation. Anyway, the point is that based on what Rabbi Yirmiyah is saying, it comes out that goyim who learn Torah and keep the Shabbat mitzvahs and do have a schar, and Hashem considers them of the level, at least in some way, in the level of a kohen gadol. So the answer is ein makablan alayim schar kimitzuva v'oisa. We don't receive a schar. That it means that they don't receive a schar for doing their mitzvahs as someone who was commanded and does it. Ela kamisha einim mitzuva v'oisa. Rather, they only get a schar for it like someone who's not commanded and does it anyway. To Amr Rav Chanina, and in fact, Rav Chanina says, "Godol amitzuva v'oisa yosef misha ena mitzuva v'oisa." A person who's commanded and then does the mitzvah because he's commanded is greater than someone who's not commanded and does it anyway. Now, why is that? So you have a number of different reasons that Rishonim and Achronim bring. Among them is because a person who's mitzvah is more concerned about it, that he needs to make sure he actually gets it right, whereas Ein Mitzvah Loisei, he doesn't feel that concern. Okay, so if I don't do it, it's not so bad. So therefore, that mental effort itself gets him a schar. And there's the idea that when he's mitzvah v'oisa, he has a yetzahara against it, whereas when he's not mitzvah v'oisa, then he doesn't have the yetzahara attacking him so powerfully. And al pi chassidus, the idea is because a mitzvah connects us with Hashem, connects the person with the mitzvah. So when a person is mitzvah v'oisa, then he has that connection to Hashem. When he's ain't a mitzvah v'oisa, then he's just doing it on his own. So then there's a limit how far. After all, a person is a nivra, a person is finite. So there's a reason why there's a limit how far he can get with that. So therefore God on silver voice. The Ur Sameach, by the way, has a very interesting point on this. He says, you know, when the Rambam talks about the Shev Mitzvah Menayach, he talks about that the Goyim have to keep it. It's not just enough for them to keep the Shev Mitzvah Menayach, they have to keep them because Moshe Rabbeinu said so at Har Sinai. So he explains our Gemara over here to be saying that it's all based on that. What we're saying is originally, where did the Shev Mitzvahs Noyach come from? They don't come from Moshe Rabbeinu. They come from Hashem gave them to Adam, and then we gave them to Noyach. So therefore, so it should be enough for them to keep them because of that. But because they stopped keeping them, therefore now if a goy wants to keep them and get a schar for it, he has to be that he's accepting them because Moshe Rabbeinu said so, because Hashem we gave them at Har Sinai together with the rest of the Torah, then we can say he gets a schar for them. Otherwise, his Ein Mitzvah V'Oisa, the fact that his ancestors, Adam Rishon and Noach, were given these mitzvahs, that's not enough to make them a Mitzvah V'Oisa because they had given them up and Hashem said, fine, then you lose the privilege of being Mitzvah V'Oisa because of that. If you want to do it, it's going to have to be because Mitzvah V'Oisa from Moshe Rabbeinu having retold them to us. Okay, so in any case, the point is that we have a couple of drushes that show this point that there is this limited example where the money of a goy is forfeit to a yid, where technically according to the swift application of the psukim it shouldn't have been because of these psukim that the goyim refused to accept the Torah or refused to accept Shevet Mitzvahs, and therefore Hashem declared their possessions forfeit for this kind of thing, especially given what Maharshal said, they didn't want to accept the Torah because it says lois signoi. So therefore, so Hashem is saying, look, you don't have any regard for anybody else's property, so therefore you don't get this privilege of getting paid for or of getting paid for damage to your property in this kind of instance. Again, you're going to talk about how it is nowadays, and when civil laws do have do require a person to pay for such a thing, that's different. I mean, first of all, you know, if nothing else, we don't have Yad Yisrael Takifa. We don't have the ability. And there were times in Jewish history when Yad Yisrael Takifa, even during times of Golos, there were some times, but nowadays we don't necessarily have. If a Yid causes damage, if a Yid's animal causes damage to a Goy's animal, to a Goy's property or whatever, he doesn't necessarily practically speaking, he doesn't have the ability to say, well, or halacha say I'm potter, therefore he's potter. The goy is not going to tolerate that. He's just going to take him to civil court. So in that case, you may not have much of a choice but to pay. But we can still talk about what the actual halacha should be. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, Ukvar shocham malchus roi vishnei sabiotis etzochachmi Yisrael. It happened already once that the Roman government sent two soldiers to the Chachamim, and they told them, Lamdunu Torahsem, teach us your Torah. Now, Tosfos asks, and now they did teach it to them, and Tosfos asks, how? You're not allowed to teach Torah to a goy. So Tosfos says, look, I mean, it was a matter of, you know, the Roman government was saying they have to do it. They didn't really have much of a choice. They're not required to be Moser Nefesh for that. On the other hand, Tosfos also brings from Sifri a somewhat different version of the story. These two people presented themselves as people who want to become Galen. So the Chachamim didn't suspect anything. And they were teaching them Torah, like you would teach any prospective gift. Anyway, according to that, then really what it was is that they had been sent by the government to find out what is this Jewish religion all about. Gerda sort of showing him a sefer on Jewish history makes an interesting point. He says when we're saying over here, here all Gemara doesn't mention, but the Sifri, when it tells the story, identifies that this happened during the time of Rabbi Gamliel. So Gerda sort of showing him points out there had been, we're talking a couple of decades after the Churban, the couple of emperors right after the Churban had been very cruel to Jews, Aspasianus and Titus, and another son of Aspasianus by the name of Domitian had been very cruel to Jews. Now you have a milder emperor has come to the throne, and therefore he wants to find out, you know, is there any basis for this hatred that the Romans have been having for the Jews for all these umpteen years, or is it all baseless? So he sent, according to that, then he sent these two agents to pose as potential Galim, find out what the Jewish Torah is all about, and come report back to me. Anyway, Koru v'shonu v'shileishu, so they learned the Torah all through once, twice, three times, or some of Foshim say that it means that that Marshal brings, and there are Rishonim who bring, the Rashba brings as well, that it means they learned Tanakh, they learned Mishnayis, they learned Gemara. Anyway, so they had now a complete picture of what Yiddishkeit is. V'shas p'tiros and Omer Lahen, when these two soldiers are getting ready to go, Saudiotis actually doesn't really mean soldiers. I'm mistranslating. Saudiotis, no, Nifter doesn't mean they die. It means when they're taking leave. Mm-hmm. Saudiotis actually means like government commissioners. So you have these two commissioners. So when they're leaving, so again, according to the way the Gemara is presenting it over here, it sounds like to begin with, they presented themselves, we are here on a commission from the government, and we want, and the government is ordering you to teach us Torah. On the other hand, again, according to the version in Sifri, not necessarily, they were presenting themselves as potential candidates for Gavers, and now when they're leaving, they're saying, in fact, we didn't come for that purpose to begin with, we came to check you out. Omru lahem, they said, Dikdaknu b'chol teraschem, we've checked through all the details of your Torah, the emesu, and all of it is true, and all of it is valid. Chutz midavar zeh, except they said, except for this one din that we're bothered by. Sha'at amayim, the din of our Mishnah, shosha Yisrael, shenogach shosha knani potter, v'shel knani shenogach shosha Yisrael, ben tam ben mur, mashalim nezer shalem, and they argued, based on what they had learned of Torah logic, memarashach, either way, it seems to be inconsistent. E re'ehu dafka, if the word re'ehu in the pasuk means specifically that these dinim of the there being a difference between tam versus mu'ad applies only between Jews, afilu d'knani, kinogach l'Yisrael lifter, then in that case, if a goy's ox gores one belonging to a yid, he should be potter, because he's not re'ehu. The e re'ehu lav davka, and if re'ehu is not meant specifically to mean davka Jews, afilu d'Yisrael nami kinogach knani l'chayev, then even if a Jew's ox gores one belonging to a goy, he should be chayev. And the Braisa editorializes the Dabarze Enonomidian Osama, we don't in fact inform the government about this kind of thing. We don't tell them the reason is that based on the Pesukim we said before, Ro Vayata Goyim and Hafiya Mehav Paran, because then the Goyim are not only they're not going to accept that, but the Goyim are going to say, you know what, if a Goy's money is Hefker to you, then we're going to start considering your money Hefker as well, and then Jews are going to be in big trouble. So therefore we don't, so you have, for example, these two Saudiotis are saying we don't understand the basis for this halacha. So we tell, so we say, you know what, you're right, that we don't understand the basis for it either, but that's how it is. Rather than telling them that's based on those Pesukim, Ro Vayata Goyim, which would get Jews into worse trouble. That's how Rashi learns this last line. There are Mephoshim who learn that actually this last line is itself part of what the Rabbeinu Peretz says. This is part of what the Saudiotis, what these two commissioners are saying. They're saying, you know what, we disagree with that halacha. We hold that halacha is inconsistent and doesn't make any sense. Nevertheless, we'll do you a favor when we give our report to the emperor of what we found. We won't mention this particular detail because we don't want to get you guys in trouble. With that said, by the way, the Yerushalmi tells this story as well here in this Gemara, and the Yerushalmi says the Yerushalmi says actually there were a couple of other halachas they were bothered by as well. One of them being a concept which we're going to learn later on in the Masechta that according to some opinions, gezel goy mutter. There are opinions in halacha that says that that gezel that was taken from a goy, a yid is allowed to keep. Now we're going to learn later. So now they said we don't like that either. So that. That the Yerushalmi goes on to say, Rabbi Gamliel made a takana on the spot that Gezel Goy is also because of Chilul Hashem. We're going to discuss that point much later in detail later in the Masechta. But anyway, the Yerushalmi also adds, because these guys had come with to learn the Torah with improper motives, just in order to send this report back to the government, the result is they reached the border of Eretz Yisrael and already they'd forgotten everything they learned. So they never were able to go back and give their report after all, in other words, or at least they weren't able to give a detailed report. I guess they were probably able to give an overall report, but they couldn't remember anything specific to be able to write in their report. The Yamshal Shlomo, by the way, the Maharshal points out a very interesting point over here. If we take it the way that the Gemara over here is presenting it, that these people to begin with said, we're Roman commissioners, and we're coming in order to investigate your religion. Then how is Rav Gamliel teaching them such a halacha in the first place? What was he thinking? Does he not realize that that could get the entire Jewish people in trouble? And so he answers, you see from this Gemara, a very important point, you're not allowed to falsify anything in Torah, even if it's a matter of pikuach nefesh. If the Torah says a certain halacha, and you're learning these relevant halachas, you have to say how it is, and if it means there's going to be trouble, it means there's going to be trouble. But you can't falsify and say that the Torah says something different than what it does, says the Yamshal Shlomo. And he brings in that connection. For example, we have this famous story in Gittin with the animal that the emperor sent as a korban with Bar Kamsa, and Bar Kamsa made a mum in it, and they were thinking to bring it as a korban, and Rav Yitzchak Ben Avskula says you can't do that, and they were thinking to kill Bar Kamsa, and Rav Yitzchak says you can't do that. So the Gemara criticizes him for being too patient and too easygoing with Bar Kamsa, but nevertheless, the Yamshal Shlomo says, based on this, he had a point. If you're going to have a situation where people are going to think that the halacha is different than what it is, that you are allowed to be makhiv a baal mum, or that a person who makes a mum in a korban is to be killed, then yes, that would be a wrong thing to do, and you're obligated to go even on Mesiras Nefesh to prevent such a thing from happening. Now, the Gemara can still criticize Rav Yitzchak over there because he could have found another way around it. They could have, for example, killed Bar Kamsa without anybody knowing about it or something, or they could have substituted a different animal without anybody knowing. So to that extent, he can be blamed, but not for the fact that he was working to prevent the falsification of the Torah, because he says, based on this Gemara, you see that's how it is.
But another thing is that it doesn't happen too often that you have someone coming from the emperor, so you got to learn all over that, you could be makara, a behemoth with a blemish. It was a one-time thing, because it doesn't happen that the Roman emperor sends down a behemoth.
This is also true, but nevertheless, I guess Rav Zahai was concerned that people might learn from that for other similar examples, but yeah.
And what about when they had the Gemara the emperor sent they sent down people in different, they put heat in different rooms and made them teach
the
Gemara.
That was a special case actually Mephoshim do point about the translation of the Torah into Greek. That's a good point. They do mention that point. Meforshim, but that's different because, first of all, they're not falsifying halacha. They're translating psukim in a way that the goyim are going to understand the pasuk better, not falsifying halacha. Second of all, the very fact over there that Hashem put in everyone's mind the exact same changes to make shows that that was min hashamayim. That was a special case. Okay. Onward. Rav Shmuel by the Gemara tells, so now the Gemara is going to tell a story which is going to relate back to this point about Hashem's relationship with the Goyish nations and what they, and what schar Hashem gives them for what they did and what punishment Hashem gives them for what they did. So the Gemara tells, Rav Shmuel by Yehuda's shrivele brata, Rav Shmuel by Yehuda's daughter passed away, omrele rabbaran la'ula kum nezel ninachame, so the Chachamim said to Ula, come, let's go and be menachem avol. But Ula says, my isle gabin chemte de bavloi, what business do I have with the comfort, with the nechumei avelim that they do in Babel, de gidufa hu, this story took place in Babel, Ula himself is from Eretz Yisrael, de gidufa hu, he says, the kind of nechumei avelim that you do here in Babel is really a blasphemy to Hashem. Because, the Amri, because in Babel they say, my efshel amevad, what can you do against Hashem's zera? Implying what? Ha'etzel mevad abdi. What implying that if you could do something different, then you do it. So I don't want to be around when people are saying such nicham avelim. And in fact, the Ramah brings in Shulchan Aruch, you shouldn't say that. You shouldn't say, what can you do? Because then, yes, that would imply, like Ula is saying over here, and if you could do something different, then you would do it. And that's disagreeing with Hashem's judgment. With that said, the Maharshal over here, again, in Yam Shal Shlomo, disagrees with that and ends up saying that actually that the Gemara is now going to bring how Ula himself was Menachem Avelim. Maharshal points out that actually there's a flaw in what he says as well, as we'll talk about later. And so he says actually, so Ula's objections to the way the Bavliim do it is not really correct, and actually there's no problem with it, says Maharshal. It doesn't mean that yes, if you could do differently, you would. It means, in other words, don't think that. After all, realize that your crying is not going to bring back the mess. So that helps the person get over their grief. But nevertheless, the Ramah brings not like that and says you're talking not allowed to say that. Anyway, so Ula went on his own to be Menachem Avol. He didn't want to go with the Bavliim, so he went on his own. And he tells him, I'll tell you the following Dvar Torah, which from that you'll come out a nichum to you. The Pasuk says, Vayomer Hashem al Moshe Eli, actually, the Pasuk says, Hashem said to me, this is Moshe speaking, Al Totsaras Moyav, don't harass Moyav, Va'al Tisker Bom Milchama, and don't provoke war against them. Now, what, meaning, in other words, that if it weren't for that, then Moshe would go to war against them. Why? Would Moshe seriously entertain the idea of fighting against Moab without Hashem's permission? In other words, it's not like Hashem has to tell him, don't do that. If Hashem doesn't tell him, go to war, then Moshe is not going to go to war. What's going on over here? So because Elam Nosam Moshe Kavachoymer Ba'atzmoy, rather Moshe made a Kavachoymer in himself. Omar, he thinks like this. Uma midyonim shall they bow al Lazarus Moyav, Madach the midyonim, who only came to help Moyav, because what happened? He had Bolak wanted to curse the Jewish people, he failed, so then he has Benois Midyon and Benois Moyav gathered together to entice the Jewish men. And so the Midyanim weren't the ones who started that. Only the Midyanim only joined. Omra Torah Tzoras Midyanim Behikisem Oisim, and still the Torah says, provoke the Midyanim and strike them and go to war against them, as in fact they did. Moyovim Atzmon the Toshken, how much more so the Moyovim themselves? They were the ones who started the whole affair. We should definitely be fighting them. How much more so? Omalei Akadosh Baruch Hu, but Hashem tells him, what you're thinking is not the way I'm thinking. You have a logical kavachoymer, it is true, but the fact is, the fact is, I have two precious doves that I intend to bring out of those nations, Rus HaMoyaviv and Nama HaMonis, Rus, who will descend from Moyav, and Namo, who will descend from Ammon, and between the two of them, you have Malchus based David, because Rus is the great-grandmother of David, and Nama eventually was one of Shloimeh's wives, and was the mother of his son Rechavam, from whom all the future kings of Malchus based David descend. So for their sake, Hashem is saying, I want to spare those nations, and I don't want you to attack them. A few things in this, Tosfos points out, chronologically, it doesn't seem to work out, because when Hashem tells Moshe, "Al totzeras Moav," is when they're first passing by Moav on their way to Eretz Yisrael. Only later on do you have Balak saw the Jewish people are around, and he starts getting nervous, and he hires Balak, and the whole affair develops from there. So it comes out that the pasuk Al totzeras Moav was said before the Moavim had ever hired Bilam and had ever started this whole story. So Parzival says, okay, what it means is Moshe would have eventually made the Kavah Chomer, except Hashem forestalled it by telling him, "Al Tzotzer Asmayav." Then Tosfos also discusses that we find that even in later generations they weren't supposed to attack Moav, except that they said, or on the contrary, we find from when exactly that, once the Moavim attacked the Jewish people with this whole thing with Bilam, and later on also after they were settled in Eretz Yisrael, the Moavim conquered Eretz Yisrael and ruled over it for a period of time. So after that, then we find that the Goyim are allowed to fight with Moav. So really all it is when Yoav is about to fight against them, and they're saying, "How could you? Your Torah says, I'll talk to us Moav." So he answers them because they started with the whole thing of Bilam. Really, Tosfos says this was only an excuse. Really, it's primarily because they had attacked later on in the times of the Shoftim. So you have all that. Hashem is telling Moshe, as much as your Kavah Chomer is very logical, nevertheless, I have deeper plans in mind, and therefore I don't want you to attack these, I don't want you to attack these nations. Ben Yehoyada adds a point that Hashem, that you could also say, Moshe knows that Hashem is going to tell them, Soros and Midyanim, because even though the story with Midyan hadn't happened yet, Moshe knew, Baruch HaKodesh, that it's going to happen, and therefore he's ready to make the Kavah Chomer now, and Hashem tells him that, no, you're going to have an exception over here because of these two precious doves that are going to come out of those nations. Now there is the point, actually, that there is the point before Hashem say, okay, well, why are we even mentioning Ammon over here anyway? Moshe, on the face of it, didn't have any plans to attack Ammon. So there's an interesting answer. We know Moav and Ammon, after all, were brothers to begin with. They were both they were half-brothers. They were the children of the two daughters of Lot, as the Gemara is going to point out soon. So therefore, if one of them is attacked, the other one is likely to come in to join them. So therefore, when we have, if Moshe would have thought to attack Moav on the basis of his Kavah Chomer, then Ammon would have joined in as well, and then Ammon could have been destroyed as well, and therefore Hashem says, don't even start the whole thing, because both of them have these precious doves that are going to come from them. So now, Ula finishes off telling Rav Shmuel by Yehuda, who had just lost his daughter, so he tells him, V'alo dvarim Kavah Chomer. Now we can make a Kavah Chomer based on this. Just for two precious doves, because of two women who are going to come from these nations, Hashem had rachmanus on two great nations, Moav and Ammon, v'loy hachrivan, and he didn't destroy them. Bita shel Rebbe, so therefore he says, when your daughter passed away, im ksherehi or uyehi, if she was kosher and she would have been worthy, that im ksherehi, if she herself was kosher, or uyehi lotzis mimena davatoiv, and something good would have come from her, alachas kamavakama dahavachoya, how much more so she would have continued to live. So in other words, in effect, he's telling Rav Shmuel by Yehuda, Hashem did a favor by removing her from the world before, since Hashem realized that nothing good is going to come from her anyway. Now, here's where the Maharshal says that's not much of a nechama. On the contrary, because, I mean, the fact is, Hashem has many reasons for deciding that. You could also have, on the contrary, a person's avoida in this world is up, and therefore Hashem removes them from the world. It's not always, Hashem has many different considerations. So therefore he says that actually Ula was not so right in doing this kind of nichum, and he should have gone with the Bavliyim and not worried about the fact that they say, what could you have done? Because he says that's not so bad, whereas again the Amos says the other way around. So now let's talk more about this matter of Ammon and Moav. Amr Abkir Ba'aba, Amr Ab Yechanan, Eina Kodesh Baruch Hu Mekapeach Schar Kol Bria. Hashem does not hold back, literally means to cut off. Hashem does not does not take away the schar of any creature, of any person, afilo schar sichana, even when you're just talking about schar for nice speech. So a person chooses to express themselves using cleaner language, then therefore Hashem gives reward even for that. The ilu b'chira, because let's consider what happened with Lot's two daughters. So they you have the whole thing. They thought there's nobody left in the world, so they have to have relations with their father and then produce children. So b'chira, the elder one, the ka'omra Moyav. Now she named her son Moyav, which is Moyav means may of, means from my father. So therefore, so it's clear. So she made it clear that it was between her and her father. So therefore, and that's a pritzistika thing to speak of. So therefore, Omra lo yachadosh baruch hu Moshe. Therefore, Hashem tells Moshe, al totzar as Moyav, don't provoke Moyav, val tisko bom milchama, don't try to start a war with them, implying milchama hu deloy, you're not allowed to start a war with them, ho an galya ovid behu, but you are allowed to force them into government service. Angaria is like when you have a king, or in this case, the Jewish people collectively that have the status of a king, where they need public works projects done, for example, they can force people, you can force people to do those. That kind of thing is called angaria. You can have also, for example, the government needs a certain number of animals for a certain purpose, and they can requisition them from people and demand that people provide them, and they'll afterwards compensate them for them. That kind of thing is called angaria. So you're allowed to do that to the Moyavim. Rashi mentions on the Pesukim as well. For that matter, you can have the Jews would be allowed to appear in front of Moyav in battle dress and show them as if like we're ready to attack you, but not actually attack them, so they can do psychological warfare on them. But on the other hand, Seira, the younger daughter, the Kamra Ben Ami, she named her son Ben Ami, a son of my people, which is a more refined way of speaking. She's not openly saying that it was from her father. So therefore, Hashem tells Moshe, v'karav to mor b'nei Ammon, when you come close, opposite the children of Ammon, al tetzurim, don't provoke them, v'al tisgar bam, and don't start up with them, and it doesn't use the word mochama, implying klal, means that, oh, dafilo angaria, le'tavid behu, you're not even allowed to force them into angaria, or to appear in front of them in battle dress, or whatever, because, so they deserve that reward, because their ancestress spoke in a more sneeristic, refined way. Tosfos points out, by the way, when it comes to the various other nations, you don't need permission from Hashem to do angaria. So most nations they would have been allowed to, but Amon and for that matter Edom, then Hashem is specifically saying that Angaria you're not allowed, but with Moyav it remains the same as any other nation. You're allowed to do Angaria with them if you're allowed to force them into Angaria if you want.
What's
Angaria we're saying is government service, to force them to do public works projects or whatever for the government, or to say that they're animals, we need to requisition your animals for government purposes, and we'll compensate you for your labor, and we'll compensate you for your animals afterwards, but you still have to provide them on the spot. And again, Rashi mentions on the Pesukim as well that it also means that they could walk in front of the Moyavim wearing the battle armor and all, and like taunting them, we're much stronger than you, and then psychological warfare, like they're going to think the Jews are going to attack even though they're not. On the other hand, continues the Gemara, a person should always be as quick as possible to do a mitzvah. Where in this case, these girls were thinking they're doing a mitzvah because again, they thought the whole world had been wiped out. Because of one single night that the elder daughter went ahead of the younger one in becoming pregnant, Kidmata Arba Duras the Israel, therefore the elder daughter ended up being four generations ahead in joining the Jewish people. Elohim, Ovid Yeshai Vidavid Islam. Because Rus was the mother of Ovid, and then four generations later, the great grandson of Ovid is Shloima, the Ilot Seira, Abrahavim. And when does the younger one, when does the one from Ammon join the Jewish people and become the ancestress of the kingship? Is only in Shloima's times. Only she became she's the mother of Rechavim. So therefore, so we see that there was a four generations difference because of that, because she was one night ahead in doing the mitzvah. Ben Yehoyada points out, the Gemara tells us in Brachas that a night consists of four mishmaris. That is why she had the schos. That's one reason why she had the schos to go four generations ahead. The Maharal makes a different point. He says that in the Aseret HaDibros, you have that Hashem says Al Shileishim Ba'al Ribeim, that Hashem says I'll remember and punish the descendants for the Averis of their ancestors up to three and four generations. So up to four generations, you still have a connection between them. Therefore, Hashem is showing like there's a disconnect between them because of this difference of four generations, because of this one night difference where the elder daughter did the mitzvah one night before the younger one, which Marshall points out. This is not contradicting the previous drasha. This one actually augments it. It's saying, on the one hand, the elder one did the mitzvah first, therefore she deserves a reward for that. On the other hand, she spoke in a less refined way, saying openly that this child she had was from her father, and therefore for that her descendants were not as protected from the Jewish people as the descendants of her sister, the Ammonites. There is, by the way, in this connection, a very interesting story that's told in the introduction to one of the later volumes of Igros Moshe, of Moshe Feinstein's Trovis. The story is that in his city in Russia, where he was the Rav, the city of Lavan, there was a fellow over there who became very, very sick. And he explains, and before he passes away, he tells Rav Moshe what happened. He says that the Shabbos before that, in Parshas Vayera, he spoke very negatively against these girls. What a chutzpah. Guys, can we have our conversations elsewhere, please? Please, another few minutes, okay? Thank you. So he's speaking very negatively against them, what chutzpah nyakis they were, and whatever. That night, they come to him in a dream, and they tell him, we want to tell you something. The reason why we did this, and not only why we did this, we know why, because we thought the whole world was destroyed. Why Taka did the elder daughter give the name Moya rather than a more refined name? She wanted to stress, she wanted the entire world to know the only way a child can be born is from a man and woman together. Don't think it can be Hashem can impregnate a woman. We could have, after all, they said, look, we're nieces of Avraham Avinu. Nobody would suspect that we were Mizaneh. We could have claimed that our children were fathered by God and we could have made them the founders of a whole new religion like happened later on. Instead, we chose to actually say openly that they were fathered by a man, and one of them even by our father, in order that nobody should ever think that children can be fathered by anybody other than a human father. Okay. So that's a certain schos in their favor. Anyway, continues the Gemara. Okay, so that's the end of the piece about God. So the reason why we brought this in is, again, because it's similar to we were talking about before, what Hashem did in terms of changing his relationship with the Goyim because of the way we behave, the same way over here we see that different nations, because of the way they behaved or their ancestors behaved, then Hashem treated them differently. Okay. Getting back now to the matter of Jews and Goyim's oxen, Tana Rabbanan, Shosha Yisrael Shenagach Shosha Kosi Potter, if a Yid's ox gores an ox of a Kosi. So till now we've been talking about actual flat-out Goyim. Now, what about the Kusim, where we know that for a long period of time, they were quasi-Jews. They were keeping some mitzvahs in the Torah, and officially they had converted, but there was always the question whether they're true Gerim or not. So now we're saying that if a gore is an ox of a Kusi, then the Yid is Potter. On the other hand, if a Kusi's ox gores one belonging to a Yid, then we treat him like any other Yid, Tam Meshalim Chatzin Nezek Umur Meshalim Nezek Shalim. So in other words, we're penalizing the Kusim to a certain extent, but not to the extent where we treat them completely like Goyim. Rav Meir says, no, Shosha Yisrael Shenogach Shosha Kusi Potter, Shosha Kusi Shenogach Shosha Yisrael Ben Tamid Mor Meshalem Nezek Shalem. So Rav Meir treats the Kusim exactly like Goyim. Well, the question is why? The member discovered Rav Meir Kusim Gerei Arayas, saying, does that mean Rav Meir holds that the Kusim are Gerei Arayas and they're not sincere Gerim, and therefore we don't treat them like Yidden at all? You have a contradiction, because a Mishnah in Nida says, Kolak Samim, whenever you have a piece of clothing that you find a blood stain on it, Haboim Me Rechem, if they come from a place called the Rechem, Tahorim, they're Tahor because most people in that place are Goyim, and the blood of the Nida blood of a Goy is Tahor Vidaraisin. And we say the Goyim are considered like Zovim and like Zovos, respectively, and therefore their blood would be Matame, but since the whole concept of a blood stain on a garment making it Tame is only Dirabanan, because Midaraisa, she's only Tame, only if she actually feels the blood, only if she actually has Agosha, What exactly that? But in any case, it's only when it's dry, not only when it comes. Yeah, I mean, Gufo, now she finds it on her clothing. So therefore, the whole concept of a kesim being matame is only dirabanan, and therefore the Chum didn't extend it to goyim. So the Mishnah says that any blood-stained clothing that comes from rechem is going to be tohur. Rabbi Yehuda matame. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda says they're tame. Mipnei shein gerim b'toyim, because the people there are in fact gerim, but they're mistaken. They don't realize that they're Jews, and therefore they're living and behaving like goyim. So we see Rabbi Yehuda holds they're Jews. So we see that in other words, Rabbi Yehuda would say that they're considered Yisrael Momer. But where's the Tanakama there says that no, they're goyim. And the Mishnah continues, Midein ha-nohrim tahorim, if blood-stained garments come from places where goyim live, then they're tahor, because again, the whole concept that even by a yid, such a thing would be tome is only d'rabbanan, and the chacham are not extending that to, goyim. But if it comes from among Jews or from among Kosim, Rab Meir Matame, Rab Meir would say that's Tomei, Vacham Matarin, the Chum say it's Tahir, Shlenechi, the Yisrael, Al Kisnehen, because Jews, or actually it's supposed to be that the word Yisrael is in parentheses over here, it's actually supposed to be Kosim, are not suspect about keeping their Ksumim, about keeping their blood-stained garments unwashed. They will wash them first before they use them for anything else, in order not to spread Torah. Rashi and Tosfos both bring over here from the Gemara and Nida, which discusses this, that says what it means is if you get such a blood-stained garment from a yid or directly from a yid or from a kusi, it's tamei. If you find it in a Jewish city, in a hefker place, then it's tahor, because we assume that Jews are going to put such things away so as not to spread Torah, and they're going to wait until they wash them before they throw them out or whatever. As you find them among the kusim, then the mayor says that we're matame because their summon would be matame, and we suspect that they're not going to be careful about hiding them away, and the chumma matahar, because they say just like Jews, they're going to be careful and put them away until they launder them. The point being that Rav Meir in that Mishnah is clearly saying we consider them like Yidden. Alma kasavar Rav Meir kusim gerei emesim. Therefore, obviously, Rav Meir holds that they're considered gerei emes. Otherwise, their blood-stained clothing would not be matame, just like from a goy, it's not matame. So what are you telling me over here that he's treating them like a goy as far as this din of an ox? So Amar Rav Abahu, knasu shekonas Rav Meir b'mamayna. The answer is, Rav Abahu says, it's true. The mayor would say they are gerei emes, but when it comes to the matter of the ox, where he treats them like a goy in both directions, that a yid is potter for goring a kusi's ox, and a goy, and a that a yid is potter for his ox goring a kusi's ox, and on the other hand, that the kusi is chayav nezek sholin for his ox goring a yid, knasu shekonis Rav Meir, this is a penalty that b'mamonim, Rav Meir applied a penalty as far as their money to treat them to that extent like goyim, shalo yitamu behem, so that Jews don't intermarry with them. When you have to this extent, they're considered like goyim, then therefore that will keep Jews at arm's length from them, and they won't become so close with them. So the Gemara says mosi Reb Zeira, but Reb Zeira says I have a contradiction on that. We learn in a Mishnah in Ksubas, the Elu Naira Shiesh Lehem Knas, the following cases, a Naira, a girl within 6 months after she develops Shtei Cyrus, has a Knas, meaning in other words that if there was a case of Oines, where somebody raped her, or Mefate, where somebody seduced her, then he's paying a fine, as it says in the Torah. So even the following ones have, and among them in the Mishnah is Habalam Amzeras Falana Sin of Alakusis. If the man has relations with a girl of that age who's a Mamzeres or a Nesina, a descendant of the Givonim, or a Kusis, then he still pays the knas, the chiddush of it is. In other words, even though in these cases he can't marry her, as the Torah says, because they're all also to marry, the mamzeras, he's also to marry daraisa. The nesina Tosfos discusses over here in brief and in greater detail in Ksubas. Is it also daraisa? Is it also drabbanon? Rashi says that it's only an issur drabbanon from the times of David HaMelech. Rabbi Natan points out there's a certain issur in it, even min haTorah, because they're descended from the seven nations. And so Tosfos discusses briefly over here what the status is of the Nesinim as far as intermarrying with them, and then in Ksubas Tosfos goes into much greater detail. Anyway, the point is the Mishnah is also mentioning a kursis, that you pay a knas, implying that they're gerei emes. And this is a matter of monetary. This is a monetary matter, and yet Rav Meir is being mechayev, the person to pay. So we see that. So what are you telling me? Knas konas rameir mamona. He also, he should penalize Kadeshali Tamubahan for the same reason, because we don't want Jews to intermarry with Goyim. So what does that mean in terms of, so if we say that Rameir holds that Kusim Geire Arayasein, then that would explain why they're paying Nezik Sholim, but then in that case, then that doesn't explain at all why you're paying Knas, where the whole concept of Knas only applies to Jews. The point is, the Shittim Kubatis brings from the Ra'ah that the Reb Zera is pointing out that you need a third explanation. Either way, whether you say Geri Emes or whether you say Geri Arias, you have a problem, or whether you say the Geri Emes, but you're penalizing them, or you're saying Geri Arias, either way, these two statements of Reb Meir seem to not fit with one another. Anyway, Omar Abaya says the answer is Kadesh Shaloy Yehichoyte Nisker. The answer is in the case of the Onus and Mefata, on the other hand, it's true you want to penalize the Kusim ordinarily. On the other hand, you don't want the sinner to gain. So therefore, this person was Onus and Mefata, a Kusi girl. You don't want him to get away with it and not have to pay at all. So therefore, we're going to make him pay. So the Gemara says V'neis V'laniyim. Okay, so maybe what we should do is, instead of him paying the father of the Kusi girl, he should just give the money to Tzedakah. We should require him to give the money to Tzedakah. So he's still losing out. He's not gaining. On the other hand, then the Kusi is not getting the money. We can still penalize the Kusi. And the answer is, I'm going to money, Mishum, to have a mom and Shein Le'tovin. The problem with that is there's no particular person who could claim that money. Any poor person who comes to this onus or mafata and says, you should give me that money instead of giving it to the Kusi, the yid, the onus or the mafata can say, I don't have to give it to you. There's lots of other aniyim around. So it's going to end up, he's not going to be paying at all. So therefore, we don't want him to do that. Therefore, we're going to make him give it to the Kusi girl or to her father. But where that consideration doesn't apply, as in the case of the shur, then we're going to say that, in fact, we're going to penalize the Kusim. We don't want Jews to intermarry with Kusim, and therefore by having this kind of penalty, it creates a certain degree of ill feeling, a certain degree of bad feelings between Jews and Kusim, and that makes intermarriage between them less likely. Whereas we learned in Kiddushin, the Kusim have Mamzerim mixed among them and various other considerations, and therefore that's why we don't want Jews intermarrying with them. Well, okay.